Good morning. This is Chief Deputy Clerk of the Court Ann Stigels, and I am standing in for the Clerk of the Court, Greg Block. I am confirming procedures for the oral argument scheduled to be conducted by teleconference this morning. If arguing counsel or judge drops from this teleconference, we will pause the proceeding and clock until the judge and or counsel are reconnected. In accordance with the instructions previously provided to counsel, we will sound a tone that sounds like this. Thank you. When counsel has 3 minutes remaining in allotted time, in a double tone that sounds like this, when counsel's total allotted time has expired. Arguing counsel in the case are on the call. Mr. Kenneth Dohakis, can you hear me?
I can.
Mr. Jonathan Morris, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am, I can.
Please stand by while I confirm the judges are on the call. Presiding Judge, Chief Judge Bartley, did you hear both counsel, and can you hear me?
Yes, Ms. Stigels, I can hear both you and both counsel.
Judge Toth, did you hear both counsel, and can you hear me?
Yes to both questions.
Judge Falvey, did you hear both counsel, and can you hear me?
Yes to both.
Thank you. Chief Judge Bartley, the call is configured, and all participants are now ready to proceed.
Very good, Ms. Stigels. You may call the court to order.
The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Margaret Bartley presiding. God bless the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Judge Bartley, and I'm joined today via teleconference by Judge Toth and Judge Falvey. We're here for the matter of Stanley L. Davis versus Robert L. Wilkie, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, docket number 18-4371. The issue before us is the board's denial of an earlier effective date for service connection for lupus, and arguments related to that, among other things, interpretations of 38 CFR 3.156B and C. Counsel for the parties, would you please state your name and your appearance for the record, beginning with appellant counsel?
This is Kenneth Dohakis for the appellant, Mr. Davis.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Dohakis.
This is Jonathan Morris, counsel for the Secretary of Veteran Affairs.
Thank you, Mr. Morris. Each party will have 30 minutes to present arguments. Mr. Dohakis, do you want to reserve any portion of your time?
Yes, Your Honor. I was reserving 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay. We will make that happen. And Mr. Dohakis, you may proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. On behalf of Mr. Davis, we want to thank this court for the opportunity to present this argument. We ask the court to find that the December 2001 claim was not final until the regional office awarded compensation for lupus in 2010. As discussed in his briefs, the board made two important factual findings. First, Mr. Davis filed a timely notice of disagreement as to the 2002 denial of compensation benefit for disability from a psychiatric disorder. Secondly, evidence submitted in May and November of 2003, while that appeal was still not final, was never addressed by the regional office or the board until the VA granted benefits for lupus with depression in 2010. Thus, under Broad, the board's favorable factual findings to which this court is bound means that the 2001 claim remained pending until the secretary finally issued a decision directly responsive to that evidence. That 2010 decision.
Mr. Dohakis, Judge Toth, I have a quick question, and good morning, by the way. So in what sense could the May 2003 statement be construed as evidence?
Yes, Your Honor. It is evidence because it tells the VA that the claimed psychiatric disability, which he first describes as a nerves breakdown, I think is the term that they used, and then in the May 2003 statement in support of claim, he tells them that it's depression. He kind of defines it as or describes it as depression, but he informs the board that it's actually caused by lupus and that the lupus started in service. And so by communicating a source of the psychiatric disability, he's communicating evidence to the board, to the VA that informs them on how his condition or his claimed disability is related to service.
But isn't that, I mean, that strikes me as more a completely different theory of service connection, right, as opposed to just kind of adding more or different evidence to an existing claim. I mean, it's a completely different basis for the claim itself.
Not necessarily, Your Honor. And when we're looking at what this evidence is communicating, we're really concerned with what is the scope of his claim. And we really have to start with the initial, well, I guess we start with Section 1110, which tells us that a claim for benefits is a request for compensation for a disability that is caused by either an injury or a disease from service. And when he originally filed the claim in 2001, he was telling the VA that I'm suffering from a psychiatric disability. And when the regional office inspected his records, nothing really jumped out at them that informed them about how the psychiatric disability was related to service. By introducing the fact that he now has lupus and that the lupus is the cause of his disability, when looked at over the Section 1110, it tells us that the source is a disease incurred during service. Lupus is causing his claimed disability, depression, nerves, whatever he's describing it as a layperson. That's how it's connected to service, and that's how we get an eligibility for compensation. And it's not necessarily a separate theory because it all relates to the original claim for compensation benefit for his disability, which he described as a psychiatric impairment.
Mr. DeHakis, this is Judge Bartley. Now, you were focusing there on the May 2003 submission from the veteran. Your argument is asking us to basically combine both the November 03 submission with the May 03 submission, or do you want us to, are you expecting us to analyze them separately? And also with regard to Judge Toth's question about isn't this a separate claim versus a or a claim under Barai, something more akin to Barai, how does Dr. Praha's diagnosis of lupus, which I believe was sent in with the November 03 submission, how does that play in here?
Yes, Your Honor, thank you. And they're not, we should not consider these separately, because when the VA is adjudicating a claim, it has a legal duty under 3.103 to, I'm trying to find the site here, to consider all the evidence, both lay and medical, and award benefits, maximize the award of benefits under the laws, under the VA's law. And so when you're considering the evidence of record, and in particular when you're looking at the VA's duty to maximize benefits, the evidence is not looked at in isolation. And when we look at I cited to Sellers and Shea in the reply brief, those two cases in particular reinforce this legal obligation by the VA to consider the totality of the evidence when considering what claim the veteran is requesting, what benefit the veteran is requesting. And so they're not looked at separately. It's looked at in totality, in concert with all of the evidence that's already been submitted, any evidence that the VA gathers, and overlaid on top of what the law requires. And this is what Clemens says. And really, Clemens is the driving force behind how do we determine what is the scope of the claim. And Clemens, of course, informs us that it's what the VA gets, what the VA gathers, what the veteran submits, and what the law says. And so for that reason in particular, it's not a new claim. And again, when we look at Delizio v. Shinseki, it's a very, very similar situation here. We have a situation in Delizio where the veteran talked about a neurological complaint, disability in his extremities, and evidence gathered during the pendency of that claim actually told the VA that it was this diabetes that caused those disabilities. Similarly, Mr. Davis complained of a psychiatric disability and evidence gathered to include what you referenced, Your Honor, the diagnosis of lupus, that the lupus was the cause of his claimed psychiatric disability. And I really want to emphasize here that this is a straight-up application of Clemens and Delizio on how do we determine the scope of a claim. It cannot be
Mr. DeHakis, this is Judge Bartley. I understand your argument, but we do have a twist here in that neither Clemens nor Delizio discussed or dealt with the new and material evidence pending claim language of 3.156B. So there seems to be differences. But as to your Delizio argument, didn't Delizio say that you need three things for an original claim to encompass a claim for the causal disability? And didn't that include causation evidence that the causal disease was already determined to be associated with service? And does Mr. Davis have that here?
Yes, Your Honor, he does. The VA in 2010 awarded compensation for lupus with depression. And in addition to that, the diagnostic code for lupus, and we're looking at CFR 4.88B, diagnostic code 6350, directs to evaluate either the residuals or under this the normal diagnostic code for lupus. And the VA, when they awarded benefits, specifically listed depression as part of the description of the lupus award or the lupus disability.
So, Mr. DeHakis, this is Judge Bartley. You are, it seems like there's a difference with Delizio. The evidence that resulted in Delizio holding that the original claim encompassed the claim for the causal disability was submitted at the same time as the claim that there was a causal disability, that it was essentially secondary. And whereas here, your reference, whenever I ask you the question about do you have the causal evidence here, you pointed to something that I believe was submitted or was developed in 2009, which was well after Mr. Davis's 2003 submission that are the focus here. So
yes,
are you saying that time difference doesn't matter here for some reason? Could you explain that?
It does not matter, Your Honor. And the reason why is because, as I started with, Berard tells us that when evidence is submitted, the claim remains pending until an adjudication that is responsive to that evidence is given to the veteran. And the board's findings, favorable findings in the instant appeal, tell us that never happened. There was no SSOC or SOC issued to Mr. Davis that was directly responsive. And because that claim remains pending under Berard, all of the evidence during that pending claim under 3.156B is treated as if it's submitted with the original claim. And so, and also looking at Clemens again tells us that we look at all of the evidence that is given to the VA, gathered by the vet, by the VA, laid on top of what the law says. And so for that reason, the timing of the entrance of that evidence that connects the causal disease to the claim disability is not important, so long as it happens before that responsive adjudication is given to Mr. Davis that finalizes that finally decides that claim. And obviously the responsive adjudication was given when the VA service connected his lupus.
Mr. DeHakis, I mean, how would you then characterize the May 2004 RO ruling denying service connection for lupus and then the psychological factors as secondary? How would you characterize that?
Thank you, Your Honor. That's something, although it is technically responsive to the evidence, because an NOD was submitted, only a board decision can finalize that claim. So the regional office could have done whatever they wanted, but that rating decision is not dispositive in any way because the law tells us that only the board can finalize that claim. The correct procedure would have been for the regional office to submit a supplemental statement of the case, and because that evidence, again, was filed within the time period of the statement of the case, keeping it pending, that would have extended his time to submit the Form 9. And so even though the regional office issued a decision, it doesn't comply with the legal requirement that the board has to finalize a decision. And I recognize that Berard doesn't necessarily address that particular situation, and I'm not aware of any case that does specifically talk about the timing of the source of the adjudication. But I do believe that because there was an NOD that was filed, the board has to be the entity to respond to that evidence.
Mr. DeHakis, this is Judge Bartley. Aren't you being a tad overbroad with that statement? Because you just admitted that a veteran, even after an NOD is filed, if a veteran doesn't file the Form 9, then the board really doesn't become involved. So don't you want to pull back on your statement about the board would have to issue a decision after a veteran files an NOD, so long as a veteran files an NOD? Excuse me.
I think that what I'm trying to say is that a board decision must finalize an appeal. The appeal in this case remained pending pursuant to Berard because the statement of the case, which is the legally required adjudication, was never issued. And the regional office could have issued any other letter, communication, whatever they wanted, but until it conforms with the legal requirements of a statement of the case, it does not end that claim. It cannot finalize that claim, and it cannot start the time to submit the Form 9 because it was legally deficient, and the case law is clear on that. If the notice in the statement of the case is insufficient, it is not the VA has not fulfilled their statutory duties to communicate, to respond to that notice of disagreement. And so until it's put in a statement of the case, which is different from a rating decision, particularly in 2003 and 2004, where the statement of the case was required to not only respond to all the evidence but provide the legal basis, which the rating decision didn't have that requirement, and notice of appellate rights, which the regional office, I'm sorry, the rating decision did not have those that legal requirement. And so until the state – yes, Your Honor.
Sorry to interrupt him, but so are you saying that basically that these forms are sort of formal requirements for something to be responsive? Something to qualify as responsive, it would need to satisfy everything you're saying here. Is that, am I understanding you correctly?
You mean the requirements within a statement of the case?
no, within, I mean, to for something to be responsive to new and material evidence, right, in, as the way you're suggesting, it would, you're saying it would have to be noted in the SSOC, described with some formality, and then ruled on by the board, or at least pursued as part of an appeal, to be final. Am I misunderstanding you? Is that a fair assessment of what you're arguing?
Under these facts, Your Honor, yes, because the notice of disagreement started the appeal. If this evidence had been submitted prior to a notice, well, if there was no notice of disagreement, then a subsequent decision may be sufficient to respond to the evidence.
And well, I mean, the point here, and I'm sorry to interrupt you again, but like the RO obviously construed this as a new claim, right? As new theories of service connection, as a totally new entity to the previous claim that described just a variety of different symptoms, right? And so they then ruled on it. I mean, they obviously did not construe this as being new and material evidence that would sort of, to which those requirements may or may not attach, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
Right. And so, I mean, I guess this all assumes that it would be first deemed new material evidence, and then if so, then it would then there possibly would be certain requirements that would kind of attach to that in terms of whether it would be properly responsive or not.
Well, yes, Your Honor, and I don't think we need to assume, because I think the evidence clearly is new and material because it expands the scope of the claim. And again, when the veteran communicates to the veteran or to the VA that clarifies the source of his disability, then that is material evidence. And that's when we look at Hodge, the Federal Circuit explained that whenever the veteran clarifies the source of the disability, then it's new and material evidence. And so regardless of how the regional office treated it, it was not a new claim, and it could not be a new claim because the law requires.
But if we look at materiality, right, obviously, you know, to be new and material, there has to be a missing element to a claim to which the new evidence sort of fills that gap. And that's why it's probative, and that's why it's material. It addresses something that's missing. Here, it essentially fills the entire gap of the, you know, it would be the in-service disability that would serve as the nexus. I mean, it's more than just sort of a missing fine point piece of evidence. It sort of is the theory of relief itself.
I'm not sure I understand the question, Your Honor.
I mean, so for instance, if, you know, in May 2001, right, the Mr. Davis, he appeals for nervous breakdown, bilateral knee and feet, hearing loss, PTSD, hand arthritis, lung problems, right? I mean, there's a wide variety of evidence that would be, you know, it's just a lot, right? And it's denied for lack of service connection, just for whatever reason. And I mean, for it to be new and material evidence, basically the claim would be that the missing piece of evidence tying together the whole claim was that it was, in fact, lupus the whole time.
Yes, Your Honor.
Right. I mean, but how is that not properly a new, like, just a completely different claim? I mean, as opposed to sort of a missing link to some aspects of that earlier claim.
Okay, Your Honor, I think I understand now. And the answer to that is that going back to Section 1110, the compensation is paid for disability from a disease or injury, not for the disease itself, but for what the disability stemming and flowing from that disease is. And so when we seek compensation for disability, again, going back to Clemens, the veteran's just telling the VA what he's experiencing, what he's observing, and kind of what's going on inside of his body, or in this case, in his mind. It's the VA's obligation to overlay that on the law and say what is he actually asking for. And so when the veteran then follows up and says, it's lupus. Lupus is what's causing all of this. Then now the claim is still for a psychiatric disability, but the fact that we now know that it's lupus that causes it, or at least that's what the veteran is alleging, the VA can focus its duty to assist efforts on identifying the beginnings of lupus within his service record. And going to the November 2003 evidence that he submitted, he specifically cited to September and February 1986 records where he was seen by physicians at the U.S. Naval Hospital complaining of how fatigued I was, and he talks about now pointing to specific service treatment records that he thinks identified the beginnings of his lupus. And that's how the scope of the claim is expanded to bring in the source of his disability, as opposed to it's not necessarily a new claim for lupus. It's always a claim for the disability caused by the lupus. And the VA here in particular got tied up on diagnoses and labels, as opposed to what is the veteran experiencing? What functional impairment is the veteran experiencing and what caused it? And when we look at it from that perspective, identifying the cause of the functional impairment, just like Delisio, we see that the claim was actually for all disability that he described as a depression or a nervous breakdown, when in fact the cause was the lupus.
Good morning, Mr. DeHakis. Good morning. This is Judge Valdi. If the May 2003 statement, claim, if you will, is not to be regarded as a separate claim, what are we to do with the, I think it was in June 2011 and again in October 2013, that the appellant, through counsel, said that he initially requested disability compensation for lupus on May 8, 2003. Isn't that inconsistent with the position you are now taking?
It is, but it's not, because I think I understand, Your Honor, that what we, I think that the answer to that question, the initial view of this record, that's what jumped out at counsel. And I think that, number one, the board has an obligation to do a de novo review, and number two, the law is what the law is. And so regardless of what we may have thought at the beginning, today...
Well, it is also those statements through counsel in 2011 and 2013 are also consistent, it seems to me, with the veteran's statement in October and November 2003. And I don't see in those that he's claiming that his psychiatric condition was associated with lupus. I see it in the May 2003 claim where it's arguably claiming secondary service connection for psychiatric disabilities. But neither of the October 2003 or November 2003 say the psychiatric condition was associated with lupus. It seems that instead they're saying that there's two problems: a psychiatric condition and lupus and its residual.
Now, this is Judge Bartley. Let's add five more minutes since time has expired.
So aren't those October 2003 and November 2003 statements consistent with the claim and or the statement in 2011 and 2013 that the initial claim for lupus was in 2003?
No, Your Honor, and the reason for that is that, for one, he references the denial from 2002 and saying what I was actually claiming was lupus. And when you look at that in conjunction with the May 2003 statement that his depression was caused by lupus, we have to go back again to, you know, what is compensation paid for? It's paid for the functional impairment. And when he tells us that the functional impairment is a psychiatric in nature, and in the October and November 2003 statements, it's the other claim or other issues that were decided in 2002, regardless of how the veteran characterizes the evidence or characterizes the claim, the law informs us on how we characterize the claim and what the claim was for. And again, I cannot emphasize enough, the claim was for psychiatric disability, functional impairment of a psychiatric nature that he then says was caused by lupus. And regardless of the, again, regardless of how he characterizes it or even how the VA originally characterized it, if it's not legally correct, then it's not, then it can't change what it is. It's either, it because it clarifies the source of his disability, it becomes a part of that claim.
So is it your position then that the board erred because it should have ignored what the veteran through counsel told them?
No, Your Honor, yeah. Because that I don't think that when we look at the most recent briefing to the board, the arguments presented to the board by me specifically argued that the original 2001 claim was never final because of the new and material evidence that was submitted. And I would like to point out that Berard was not issued until 2014. And although it didn't necessarily create new law, it explained to us how to properly apply 3.156, which postdates those original arguments. And honestly, that's what triggered my initiation of this new argument or this change in argument was the Berard decision. And in particular, you know, Sellers and Shea were also issued within the last 2 years, which further clarified how we determine what is a claim and the contours of that claim when we're looking at the evidence of record.
Now, Mr. Dahakis, this is Judge Bartley. As to the point you just made, isn't it really a bond in 2011 with the Federal Circuit where the Federal Circuit held that essentially whenever there's a submission received during the period for appealing a decision, a submission from a veteran or claimant, that is, VA must make a determination whether the submission contains new material evidence relating to a pending claim. Isn't it Bond that said that, and did that happen here?
Yes, Your Honor, you're correct. Bond does say that, and that did not happen here. Again, because the NOD was filed, it had to come in the form of a supplemental statement of the case, or at least in the statement of the case, and it was not.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Sorry. No, I just wanted to point out, Your Honor, that in Bond, the court specifically said that the VA's characterization of Mr. Bond's submission as a new claim did not foreclose the possibility that it may have also contained new and material evidence pertaining to the initial claim. And I think that that's also what we see here.
Thank you. Judge Toth, do you have any further questions?
Not right now. Thank you.
Judge Falvey, do you have further questions?
No, I don't. Thank you.
Okay. Since your time has expired, Mr. Dahakis, you may summarize, and then we'll have the Secretary come up.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll save my summary for my rebuttal time.
Okay, great. Thank you, Mr. Dahakis. Mr. Morris, you may proceed.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Generally, the effective date for an award based on a claim reopened after a final adjudication is the date of receipt of the new claim or the date entitlement arose, whichever is later. The statutory framework does not allow for the board to reach back to the date of an original claim as a possible effective date for an award of service-connected benefits that is predicated upon a reopened claim unless the prior decision is revised on the grounds of clear and unmistakable error. Appellant explained in his reply brief how the issue of Q is not before this court. As is relevant here, case law does provide guidance on identifying the scope of a claim, which may ultimately result in an earlier claim for benefit being found to have reasonably encompassed the claim for a previously unidentified condition. Following recent precedent, DeLizio, Shea, and Sellers are the three main cases that provide such guidance. However, as will be discussed, appellant is unable to rely on any of these cases to expand or otherwise transform his December 2001 claim into one that reasonably encompassed a claim for lupus. Moreover, appellant is unable to negate the finality of the June 2002 and May 2004 rating decisions because new material evidence has not been submitted.
What do you say to Mr. Dehaka's argument that merely identifying it as lupus, tying together, it was sort of the missing evidentiary piece that tied everything together, and so this was really new and material evidence that VA had to respond to?
Yes, Your Honor. So the May 2003 submission did not expand the scope of the December 2001 claim because it was nothing more than a bare lay assertion from appellant that any mental condition he may have is related to lupus. So this is vastly different from DeLizio, where service connection for the cause of disability in that case, diabetes, was presumptive. In an analogous context, the Federal Circuit held in Waters versus Konseki that a claimant's conclusory generalized statement that a service illness caused his present medical problems was not sufficient to trigger VA's duty to provide an examination or medical opinion. If a mere lay statement is insufficient to overcome this low threshold to obtain an examination or opinion, then it certainly should not be enough in this case to trigger the expansion of the claim under DeLizio.
And Mr. Morris, this is Judge Bartley. Provided a semi-quotation from the Federal Circuit bond decision when asking Mr. Dehakis a question, and that was basically that in bond, the Federal Circuit held that under 3.156B, the regional office or the AOJ would have to make a decision as to whether a submission from the veteran that occurred during the appeal period, whether that contained new and material evidence relating to a pending claim. Now, I understand that you've cited some law about finality, but doesn't 3.156B provide an express exception from finality where the AOJ has not determined whether evidence submitted or a submission even received during the appeal period, but they haven't determined whether it is new and material evidence relating to a pending claim?
Yes, Your Honor. So specifically, the Federal Circuit in Berard and this court in Mitchell versus McDonald held that a claim remains open until VA provides a determination that is, the quote, directly responsive to the new submission. However, the only way to interpret these holdings without reaching the absurd result of rendering Section 3.156B inoperable is to view them as rendering an otherwise final adjudication as pending for the sole purpose of VA making a specific determination. So accordingly, if VA ultimately determines that a new submission was not new material evidence, then the original claim did not remain pending. Here, in the decision on appeal, the board determined that appellant's 2003 submissions were nothing more than a new theory of entitlement, which is incontestably not new material evidence. Thus, the December 2001 claim did not remain pending, and Section 3.156B did not require the board to assign an effective date earlier than the one previously assigned.
Yeah, Mr. Morris, this is Judge Bartley. Yeah, I understand that, but isn't that the issue here as to whether, in Bond also, the government argued that, hey, treating it as a new claim is fine. And so that's what they did here. They treated it as a new claim. And you're saying that the board, affirmed that and found that it was a new claim. But isn't that the issue that you can't use that as your reasoning in response to Mr. Dehakis, because that's actually what we're arguing here is Bond basically said that even though you could interpret evidence as establishing a new claim, nevertheless, VA is determined, must make the determination, whether it is new and material evidence relating to a pending claim under 3.156B. It sounded like you were saying like Bond and Barad are absurd. So if you can draw some lines here, you certainly weren't saying that about this Federal Circuit decision, were you?
No, Your Honor. Let me try and explain what I was indicating earlier. You are correct. Again, the Federal Circuit of Barad and this court in Mitchell held that the claim remains open, for VA to make that direct response, provide a determination that is directly responsive to the new submission. In Barad, in Mitchell, in other non-precedential cases that this court has vacated the board decision and remanded for further development, VA, whether it was the RO or the board, no entity provided such a determination. But in this particular case, in Davis's case, we have the board, in response to appellant's underlying argument to the board, made that specific determination. They did it in the decision on appeal. And their determination was that those submissions in 2003 were not new material evidence. What I was indicating was that if the court was to interpret Barad and Mitchell and the cases that followed as keeping the claim pending for any other reason other than VA making this specific determination that is directly responsive to the new submission, then that would render Section 3.156B inoperable.
Mr. Morris, this is Judge Bartley. I'm a little concerned that your statement here that the board could make the determination on the appeal of the effective date would violate the one review on appeal that the veteran has a right to. You're saying it doesn't matter that the RO down below didn't make this determination. The appeals body can make it. But wouldn't that violate the right to one review on appeal of a determination like that?
Your Honor, to the extent as appellant's counsel indicated, there has not been any case law, whether presidential or non-presidential, that sort of had these specific facts. To what I can say is that the court has remanded appeals where VA did not provide a determination. And in the remand instructions, directives, they requested that the board to first make that determination, with respect to the new submission. And then if it's found to be sort of new material evidence, then proceed to, re-adjudicate re-adjudicate the issue of the earlier effective date based off, not with the date of the earlier claim now potentially being open as and a date that could be assigned as an earlier effective date. Specifically addressing Delizio, this court provided a standard to apply when attempting to identify whether a pending claim for benefits reasonably encompasses a claim for an unclaimed or later claimed disability. Specifically, Delizio instructs that when a claim is pending and information obtained reasonably indicates that the claim condition is caused by a disease or other disability that may be associated with service, then the secretary generally must investigate the possibility of secondary service connection. If that causal disability or disease is in fact related to service, Delizio holds that the pending claim reasonably encompasses a claim for benefits such that no separate filing is necessary to initiate a claim for benefits for the causal disability or disease, and such that the effective date for the causal disability can be as early as the date of the pending claim. To this point, the secretary acknowledges that Delizio was potentially implicated upon submission of the May 2003 statement because it was received during the pendency of the 2001 claim. However, as noted earlier, the May 2003 submission did not expand the scope of the claim because it was nothing more than an unsupported lay assertion, which is vastly different from what was held in Delizio. Now, to the extent that appellant argues that the Federal Circuit's holding in Berard rendered his December 2001 claim pending until the June 2010 rating decision. To that point, as we discussed earlier, Berard and Mitchell indicated that even if VA were to grant the claim, if it finds that the subsequent evidence, the new submission is newer material evidence, then it potentially allows that earlier effective date. Again, appellant's interpretation of the law is incorrect here. The June 2010 rating decision wouldn't have, rendered to the 2001 claim not pending. So again, to that point with Berard, as I was trying to, indicate earlier, the claim, would have been pending from May 2003 until the June 2018 decision on appeal, when the board directly made that determination and was pending for the sole purpose of VA making this specific determination.
Mr. Morris, this is Judge Bartley. You were talking about the May 2003 submission and how it's a mere lay statement or something like that. What about the November 2003 submission, or at least the letter? He submitted several things in October or November of 2003. I think it was November, even though his letter was dated October 2003. But he also submitted with that in October, a doctor's diagnosis of lupus. Does that change your view at all? And why not? If not?
It does not. The diagnosis of lupus appellant also submitted, with those documents, a request to obtain medical records. The RO further developed the claim. They made the request to get the medical records. They ultimately determined that lupus was not related to service. Irrespective of the fact that he had a current diagnosis of lupus. So, appellant submitting a diagnosis for lupus after he had filed the new service connection claim in May 2003, or, we want to interpret it as part of the December 2001 claim, doesn't change the fact that at that point we're still missing, the nexus, which was lacking at that point. And I think that was kind of, covered in Shea, where the Federal Circuit recently held that VA must look beyond the four corners of a claim stating document when the documents themselves point elsewhere, such as the medical records. But specifically, in December 2001, appellant submitted the specific service connection claim for nerves breakdown and PTSD, among other issues. But nowhere in that claim stating document does appellant point VA to look elsewhere in deciding what disability, conditions, or symptoms that claim stating document is sympathetically understood to be identified. Rather, as indicated by the June 2002 rating decision, the RO reviewed the four corners of that December 2001 claim stating document and ultimately identified and adjudicated six service connection claims. As the four corners of, the December 2001 claim standing document, did not point VA to look elsewhere in deciding the scope of the claim, appellant is unable to expand the scope of that December 2001 claim under Shea. Lastly, in Sellers, this court held that a general statement of intent to seek benefit when combined with VA possessing service treatment records containing a reasonably identifiable medical diagnosis may be sufficient to constitute a claim for benefit. Here, in December 2001, VA received a specific statement from appellant seeking entitlement to service connection for several explicitly articulated disabilities to include a psychiatric condition. This December 2001 claim was after he filed a similar service connection claim for psychiatric problems in October 1999 and before he submitted a statement in May 2003 specifically requesting service connection for lupus and expressing his belief that any mental condition he may have was caused by his lupus. Thus, it's quite clear that the December 2001 claim stating document was not a general statement of intent to seek benefit. Additionally, even if that December 2001 claim stating document was interpreted as being a general statement of intent to seek benefit, the record does not include a reasonably identifiable in-service medical diagnosis of lupus. Ultimately, appellant is unable to rely on either Seller, Shea, or a combination of DeLizio and Barad in his attempt to expand the scope of his December 2001 claim to encompass the claim for lupus and negate the finality of the June 2002 and May 2004 rating decision. Turning next to the appropriate standard of review in this case, as noted, in the decision on appeal, the board made a factual determination that appellant's 2003 submissions were not new and material, but rather merely advanced a new theory of entitlement. Since the en banc court's opinion in Elkins versus West, this court has generally reviewed the board's factual determination as to whether a claimant has submitted new and material evidence to reopen a previously denied claim under a clearly erroneous standard. However, in certain instances, the new and material evidence determination will be reviewed de novo, such as when assessment of whether corroborative evidence is neither cumulative or redundant under Section 3.156 is a matter of regulatory interpretation, or when the lack of materiality of a document can be determined on its face. Here, while the circumstances of this case indicate that the use of the clearly erroneous standard of review is appropriate, whichever standard this court employs, the outcome will be the same since the lack of materiality of appellant's 2003 submissions can be determined on their face. Notably, the board found that the lay statements submitted in 2003 were nothing more than an assertion of a new theory of entitlement, which is well established, is not new material evidence that supports the finality of a prior rating decision. On its face, appellant's belief that his depression and all other mental conditions are a result of his lupus was not supported by any evidence other than his bare lay assertion. In the decision on appeal, the board noted that VA responded to appellant's request to obtain medical records in support of his claim, whereas his provider's requests were either negative or they failed to respond to the request. Rather, it was not until the August 2009 VA examination report that appellant's depression was noted to be a current symptom to his lupus. This is not a case where a theory of entitlement advanced by the claimant went unaddressed prior to a final adjudication. In fact, even if it was, this court held in Bingham that the failure to consider all possible theories that may support a claim is not an exception to finality. Ultimately,
Mr. Morris, but Bingham didn't involve any interpretation of 3.156B, did it?
No, ma'am. Ultimately, not only has appellant failed to adequately demonstrate why the clearly erroneous standard of review is not the appropriate standard based on the circumstances of this case, but he has also failed to indicate how the outcome in this case changes, even if this court employs the de novo standard of review. In conclusion, the Secretary is asking this court to affirm the board's decision on appeal. Such a ruling would not establish a new rule of law by extending DeLizio beyond what was originally intended, nor would it interpret Barad in a manner that would rule 3.156B inoperable. Considering the foregoing, if there are no further questions, The Secretary respectfully requests that the court affirm the board's June 1, 2018 decision in all respects.
Judge Toth, do you have further questions for Mr. Morris?
I don't. Thank you.
Judge Falvey, do you have further questions for Mr. Morris?
No, I don't. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Morris. Mr. Dehakis, you may proceed with rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I have 3 points I want to raise. Number one, 3156B is a legal requirement that VA must give a responsive adjudication no matter how long it takes. And the Secretary emphasized that, you know, we're trying to use, Mr. Davis is attempting to use this rule as a way to indefinitely keep this claim pending, but that's actually what the law requires. The VA, all the VA had to do was what they were required to do in 2003. They failed to do that, and the law says that that claim remains pending. With regard to Shea, the Secretary correctly noted that Shea dealt with a general statement of an intent to apply for benefits plus additional references within the claim stating document. However, the rule of law is not limited to a general statement of intent to benefit. The rule of law says that a claim is a request for compensation benefits in this situation for disability that is caused by disease or injury. And even though, you know, Shea dealt specifically with a general statement of intent, in this case, the end product is still the same. The veteran requested compensation for benefits. And later, when he discovered that the VA had made a mistake or some mistake was made in how they were addressing his claim, he told them, no, it's actually lupus that's causing the disability, and so I want benefits for everything caused by lupus, not just the psychiatric impairment. And this is reinforced by the VA's obligation under 3.103A, and I'm reading here from the regulation, proceedings before VA are ex parte in nature, and it is the obligation of VA to assist the claimant in developing the facts pertinent to the claim and to render a decision which grants every benefit that can be supported by the law. This obligation attached to that December 2001 claim, and the law required the VA to expand the scope of that claim under Delisio and Clemens to include the source of the claimed disability. And Judge Bartley, you are correct although I disagree that with the Secretary that a general lay assertion is not sufficient to be new and material evidence. In this case, we have a little bit more than that with the diagnosis, the medical diagnosis, and Mr. Davis communicating that that was the cause of his disability.
But Mr. Dehakis, so, you know, I'm looking at the October 2003 SOC, and it basically, I mean, it notes that the psych condition was denied on two grounds, right? One was nexus, but the other is that it says there's no current medical evidence showing that you have a chronic acquired psychiatric condition, right? And so, I mean, sure. The lupus might speak to the next, but it doesn't really speak to whether there's a diagnosis of the secondary condition at all.
Well, correct, Your Honor, but and that's really why the evidence is material by bringing up the fact that he has lupus and that it causes psychiatric disability combined with the VA's own regulation under Diagnostic Code 6350, which directs to rate all residuals separately, or at least consider that to maximize benefits, he's telling the VA that I have psychiatric disability. I have functional impairment. And I know that I'm aware of current cases pending before this court that are dealing with whether a diagnosis is required for psychiatric claims or not. But in this case, I don't think that that necessarily applies because he's describing functional impairment or at least claiming to have functional impairment, psychiatric in nature, that is caused by the diagnosed lupus. And so once he says, I have lupus and it's causing this functional impairment, he's met the requirement of identifying a current chronic disability And that is really why it's material. That is why it expands the scope of the claim under Clemens and DeLisle. And I'm nearly out of time, but I just wanted to touch base on, or touch on the de novo review. I do believe, as we argued in our briefs, that this is a matter of, that this is a legal question. And in every case in which the scope of a claim is expanded, it is material as a matter of law, because of when you expand the scope of a claim, it necessarily addresses either the in-service occurrence or a current disability. There is, I'm racked my brain. I cannot fathom any evidence that would expand the scope of a claim that would not address at least one of those two elements of a claim for benefit. And so because it addresses one or both of those, it should be material as a matter of law, and that would require a de novo review by the court in deciding whether it meets the requirement of material, the definition of material as found in 3156A. So
Mr. DeHakis, this is Judge Bartley. Given that 3.156B and associated case law makes clear that the AOJ must make a determination whenever there's a submission during the appeal period, why are you – do you really need to meet all the any requirements related to DeLisle or Clemens?
Not necessarily, Your Honor. However, the way I read Berard is that it remains pending until a response of adjudication is given. And when that response is, it's not material, then that closes the claim. That means it was, even though it's technically pending, it's no longer pending because the evidence was not material. And in order to get to material evidence, we must, in this case, show that it expanded the scope of the claim or clarified the source of the disability in order to make it material. So if all he did was submit evidence and it had nothing to do with the claimed disability, then we wouldn't be here because it technically would be pending under Berard, but because it's not material, it wouldn't matter. That data claim, that 2001 claim would have been finally denied in 2003. And so the reason we have to talk about the scope of the claim is because that's what drives the entire analysis here. That's what determines whether it's material. And again, any evidence that expands the scope of the claim because it addresses either the current disability or the in-service incurrence is material as a matter of law by definition.
And so you're saying that we could otherwise find any violation of 3.156B harmless unless you okay.
Would that mean that the board could make the responsive determination, or would the RO first have to make it and then go to the board?
I think that the initial determination has to be made by the regional office. However, because it is a de novo review, I think that could be a harmless error that the board never now, if there are facts to be developed in that situation or there's something else that needs to be developed, then perhaps it should be remanded to the regional office. But I think under 7104A, this is a question within the matter that should be first determined by the regional office. And of course, in this case, it never was. The first determination was by the board in the instant appeal.
Judge Toth, do you have any further questions for Mr. DeHakis?
No, I'm good for now. Thank you.
And Judge Falvey, do you have further questions?
Yes. Quickly, so I just want to clarify, do you want us to determine if it's new and material evidence?
Yes, Your Honor, that's what we're asking. We're asking first that the court determine that the evidence did, in fact, by applying Clemens and DeLisle, expand the scope of the claim to include all disability related to lupus, which was the source of his claim, the disease source, and then secondly, to under a de novo review, to find that because it expanded the scope of the claim, it is material as a matter of law.
And if we disagree with you and find that it's not new and material under whatever standard, then you lose, right?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, let me hedge that up just slightly, because there's a 3156C argument, which we're not talking about here. So technically,
understood.
The claim, there could be a separate issue that would necessitate a remand.
Understood. Thank you. No further questions.
So, Mr. Dahakis, you would not be satisfied if we were to determine that there was a violation of 3.156B because the AOJ did not make a determination as to whether the May and November 2003 submissions were new and material evidence, you would not be satisfied with that.
If that was the ruling of the court, then that would satisfy this appeal, because it directly addresses the issue of whether the claim was finally denied. And I would obviously prefer that we take care of this now, if possible, just because of the length of this claim. I mean, we're coming up on 20 years now since all of this started, but I do understand that ruling would obviously benefit my client, and we would be satisfied with that, at least initially.
Thank you. Okay, thank you, Mr. Dahakis. And we thank counsel all very much for your argument. The case is submitted for consideration, and the court is adjourned.
The court is now in recess.